irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
That music comes from a very dear old friend of mine, 40 plus years, named Rick Gilman. He is a musician extraordinaire, a hell of a good guitar player. He's got several albums out, and he graciously gave us this piece of music for our show. It needed to be kind of middle of the road on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the bookie heard it yesterday, she grabbed it. She said, "That's it. We're done."
Okay. Well, if the bookie says, the bookie gets.
The bookie wins. It doesn't matter. Yes. And for those of you who don't know who the bookie is, it's Jerry, Christina, and Stephanie. That's the producer of our show, my boss, in life as in well in the show. So, hey guys, you're listening to another wonderful edition of here, LA Talk Radio, and this, of course, is the Writer's Block. We bring to you weekly wonderful writers and people and purveyor of the word. Oh, wasn't that wonderful the way I did that? My name is Jim Christina. I am the host of this show, along with the wonderful, beautiful, talented, nice, charming, giggly Bobby Jean Bell. And Richard Polinelli, of course, my business partner in Tuscany Bay Books, and my friend, and of course, our third co-host. Mm-hmm. And we come to you live every week on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, and we go out worldwide, and this is, of course, live radio. So if it happens, it happens. There's nothing we can do about stopping it. So, like picking up Henry Park, where in the world is Henry Park?
Well, he's a roving reporter, so.
Oh, my God, he is, too. And, you know, I can't give him a hard time because he's doing the audiobook for Jefferson's Chance and for Jonah Blue. So I have to kind of give him a break. So anyway, what's going on, guys? Anything exciting? Okay.
Apparently not.
Well, I will tell you that we have picked up another three books from Declan Finn, a great science fiction author. We recently signed a contract with him to pick up his new three books, the Ranger series. And we'll be starting in those probably tomorrow or Monday. And then, of course, we just finished Caroline Giamanco's book. It'll be going to publishing about the 15th of this month. It'll be out for sale. And on the 17th, you can go to the Tuscany Bay website right now and pre-order either ebook or a printed book. Both available on the website. Of course, there is a link to Amazon for the ebook. So if you want to go there and do that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I don't have anything really good to say other than I'm working on two books right now at the same time, which is something new for me. Of course, being on this show and working with Tuscany Bay and Richard, which is always a delight, I don't really have a lot of time. So when I get up at 2:30 in the morning, our guest, Stephanie Levine, I did was finished reading your book at 3 o'clock this morning. Wow, dedication. That's what it's called.
That is dedication. Thank you.
It is. It really, truly is. And I shoot myself every time I do that because then I have to nap. But hey, naps are cool. So we don't have Henry Park, so let's get right into our guest. She is an award-winning author. She has written over 50 books, not all in her own name, I might add. The question was posed today by Bobby, and I think that's a valid question, and I'm going to let Bobby pose that question. That would be the GW question, the ghost. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah. Are you already there, though, or did you want to say something?
No, not yet.
I was going to say.
Stephanie's latest book, of course, is Deadlines. Wait a minute. Is that, you know?
Headlines.
Huh?
Headlines.
Oh, Headlines, Deadlines, and Lies. And it's a wonderful, wonderful story. The protagonists, there are two, are Piper and Boots. Boots is like one of the most fabulous characters I think I've ever read in a book anywhere. And I'm going to bring her in now because I can tell she's just chomping at the bit to say nice things about Boots. Please welcome to the Writer's Block a client of Creative Edge Publicity, which gets around this show. Soon to be a good friend of ours, I hope, Ms. Stephanie Levine. Stephanie, welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thank you. This is such a privilege. I'm so excited to be here with you guys.
Oh, we are absolutely excited to have you. Boots, where did Boots come from?
Where did she come from?
She's such a cool woman. I mean, Piper looks cool, but Boots.
Yeah.
Boots is a friend that everybody always wanted to have but doesn't. You know?
Yeah, you know, and I'm... it's funny because I was actually just kind of having self-reflection on my writing process. And, you know, you and Jim, you and I were talking, you know, about craft the other day a little bit. And so I've really been digging in just on I'm working on two new books. And I was just saying that sometimes my protagonists that hit a little bit close to home to me personally, I feel like not that I've struggled with them, but they're not nearly as interesting. I don't have as much fun with them, you know, as I do my, like, the side characters just start exploding for me off the page. And Boots was like that. She wasn't even originally in my first idea of the story. And I actually cast this book sort of going through and choosing what actors would I have, which I don't always do, but I did for this one. And there was this actress that just had a face, and I just looked at her and I was like, that's Boots. And then just started writing her. And it's funny because I can't look at every single picture of the actress because then it kind of would change the context. But there's just a couple pictures. And then she just came, and then she just was so fun to write because I have very close relationships. Like, I'm a friend person. And so I got to throw all of my favorite things about being like a best friend into her. That I love. So I'm really glad you guys, that's fun. I've never got to really talk about.
So you think you're Boots?
I don't know. I'm probably part Boots. And I think she's also she's definitely part fiction. You know, she's really, really, I mean, she's all fiction, you know, but she was also sort of the love I have of my different close friends, almost like a combo of just the way I talk to different ones of them, or just, you know, the way we play with each other and talk and lean on each other. So she's fictional, but a lot of my heart, I think, was in just their relationship.
Yeah. I'm going to say that I think that probably, Bobby, you will probably agree with me on this. Richard, you're in and out so often that I don't know if you can agree or not. Boots is like one of the most well-rounded characters I think I've ever read in my life. She's so well-rounded. She's so attached to the earth. And it's like really great their conversations are priceless. Their conversations are like, your dialogue with Boots and Piper is phenomenal. They are just so good. And Richard,
radio, but I'm blushing.
we can see it because you are in color. Really in color. Richard and I both are writers, and we both do dialogue very well, and I love to read good dialogue because it really makes the story pop. And Boots and Piper have such a relationship, I mean, since they were kids, that nothing gets by either one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's wonderful to see a character that's as well-rounded, especially when Well, the book itself is a mystery without a body. I think, Bobby, you brought that up this afternoon. So it's kind of like funny to read a mystery that really has no body. And it's based solely on one of Richard's favorite things in the entire world, and that is
genealogy. Because I spent 3 years as a genealogist for a law firm.
No way! I did not even know that was a job. But also,
it's got a really exciting. It's got a really fancy title called forensic genealogist.
Interesting. I once rented an apartment to a forensic analyst, and he would go into bad guys' computers, well, probably good guys too, and find all the dirt that they'd tried to erase. Yeah. But now, wow, genealogist, you're blowing my mind.
Yeah, well, basically you take somebody who has passed away and nobody knows anything about them, and you take what little information you get from the county and you go do their life until you find their family for them so they can settle the estate.
And we have a mutual friend, Andrea Kidd, that is a genealogist for horses.
Yes.
And goes to court. And it's a whole bloodline, horse bloodline thing.
Yeah. It's just insane. She did a bloodline for my Arab mare, Mariah, O.A. Marana. She did the bloodline for that.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrea is an interesting person all the way around.
Yeah.
So when I was reading your book and got into the genealogy part of it, I was like, this is kind of fun. I'm flashing back to some of the cases that I worked on. Some of them I wish I couldn't remember, but you know how it goes. But no, it was fun to see that come up in a story and to get into the story with that.
That's cool. I think I'm one of a very small subset of genealogical mysteries. So it was very easy to be a bestseller in that category. But yeah, that's very cool. I was curious when I was writing it. My mom's really into genealogy, and one of my grandmothers, and actually, as it said in the book, this wasn't meant to be written super close to home, but there's just a lot that I pulled from. And I always said she has all these great stories, and my grandmother too was doing the research way before, you know, the internet, and that we had a lot of what we have now. And I'm like, I want to learn all these stories. I do not have as much time as I want to do that. And so this was a bit of a fun foray in getting to play around and be in that world that I intend to one day read through all the stories and learn all the dirt and get it all. But that's interesting.
Can I jump in?
Absolutely. I was looking at you thinking you had a question.
Well, there's so many things to talk about. But if we can talk about Boots again for another moment, I think this world that you've created, this magazine world, is so interesting. And Boots, who we just do love her, but, you know, she's the obit editor. And for a gal that's just so full of life, it's just so sort of interesting that she's the obit editor. But I love that scene where Piper is coming into her office, and let me see, is JP with her, and she's working, the mayor has gotten into an accident, and she's got to stay on top of, you know, the latest news. And the scene, the dialogue in that scene and the action, we see Boots is, you know, got the pencil between her teeth or whatever, the whole, I just felt like I am right there in that office, and what wonderful dynamic was going on between all of those characters. And we got to see her kind of at work in her work person, which isn't any different from her theater person. And she's just really fun. I think I would love, next time you introduce me, Jim, I want to be quirky. I don't know what I need to do to change my personality to be quirky, but those two gals are, and I want to be like them.
Well, all you need to do is request it, BJ. And, okay, my quirky co-host, Bobby Jean Bell.
There you go.
From Albuquerque, right?
Well, in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
No.
No. You know, right now we're going to take a real quick break, so don't go away, anybody. Sam Henry is ready to be called if you want to take care of that. And right now, we'll be back in just a few moments after this word from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says Be a Host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we're back, and we have finally been joined by Where in the World is Henry Park. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Jim. I'm sorry about that. I didn't realize I had my phone off.
Stephanie, we're going to delay you for about 3-4 minutes. And I'm here from our roving reporter, wherever the hell he is today, nobody knows. So, Henry Park, in your Wild West news, what is going on, my friend?
Well, I'll tell you, I just spent a great day with your friend and mine, Western author, screenwriter, and director C. Courtney Joyner. We're doing audio commentary for a 1968 John Wayne movie. It's directed by Andy McLaughlin, written by Claire Huffaker, and co-stars Catherine Ross, Jim Hutton, Vera Miles, Bruce Cabot, J.C. Flippin, but it's not a Western. Any guesses?
1958?
No, 68.
Oh, 68. Green Berets.
Yes.
No, the one right after. You know what? It is almost exactly the same cast, except for Catherine Ross, but it's Hellfighters, the one based on the life of Bret the Hitman.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's being put out by a British outfit, Signal One, and Court just spent the morning interviewing Ed Faulkner, who's for the Blu-ray, and he's got a great role. And he did 7 films with Wayne and countless other Western. Now, a big story broke just Wednesday night. Paramount Plus has announced a new Western series. It's a prequel to the Kevin Costner, Taylor Sheridan series Yellowstone that airs on Paramount TV. It's called 1883. It's about the earlier pioneer generation of the Dutton family. Uh-huh. And it will star singers Faith Hill and Tim McGraw and Sam Elliott.
Whoa.
Oh.
Big hitters.
My one complaint is Yellowstone is on Paramount TV. This is on Paramount Plus, is in what, $4 or $5.95 a month?
Yeah, we have it. We have it. They have a lot of stuff on it.
Well, that's good. Now, tomorrow, Friday, August 6th, a fascinating documentary premieres on Amazon Prime. It's called Val. It's about Val Kilmer, and it was edited from the many thousands of hours of video and home movies that he's been shooting ever since he was a kid. That has ever happened to him. Mm-hmm. He's indelible as Doc Holliday in Tombstone, but he's also been called difficult and erratic. With this movie, you'll have a much better understanding of the man, the choices he's made, and you'll also see how he relates to his loyal Western fan. Now, I've been getting beat up a bit this past month for alerting readers to the premiere on TBS of Miracle Workers, Oregon Trail, the comedy series starring Daniel Radcliffe and Steve Buscemi. A lot of readers have reached out to say they hate it. Have you folks seen it yet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Oh, I watched one episode.
Well, I think that sums it up.
Okay. I watched five minutes.
Oh, boy, another rave review. And then you saw just 5 minutes and gave it 5 stars and changed the channel. It's extremely coarse and broad and sometimes clever. I'm enjoying it, but, I'm certainly not expecting a history lesson from it.
No.
And I do give them credit for their homage to Blazing Saddles in episode 2.
Yeah. Well, it's too slapstick for me.
If it's slapstick, you have to be really good. And they're not quite Mel Brooks. For the August 15th posting of Henry's Western Roundup, I've interviewed author Andrew Arish, who's written a wonderful film history, Vitagraph, America's first great motion picture studio. It's a remarkable study about a movie company that back in the 19-teens was releasing 175 new films a year. They started in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue and eventually opened a Vitagraph studio in L.A. And 108 years later, the facility is still in business. Now it's called Prospect Studios, and it's the current home of General Hospital and Grey's Anatomy.
Huh. Isn't Vitagraph the one that used to do the three-sided sets out in middle of San Fernando Valley? And they would have like a war picture and a drama and a Western all filming at the same time in different sets.
No, that wasn't Vitagraph. I can only say that pretty sure because they were never in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay. It wasn't them.
But I think that was Selig.
Oh, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you may remember that last month I talked about Idris Elba's new Western for Netflix, The Art of Fall. Well, the British Film Institute has chosen that film to open their annual BFI London Film Festival on Wednesday, October 6th, and it'll be available on Netflix on November 3rd.
Okay.
Martin Scorsese is currently filming Killers of the Flower Moon, based on the true story of the mysterious murders of several Osage Indians in the 1920s. It stars Leo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Barry Corbin, and Cardinal Jesse Plemons, and they just signed Brendan Fraser. So he's joining the cast.
Really?
And, yeah. And as you know, he hasn't been getting a lot of good publicity. It hasn't been working a lot lately. So
no, he hasn't.
Oh, no, I don't mean to brag, but my daughter, Sabrina Park, is the producer of Church in the Fourth Estate, which was just nominated for an Emmy for Best Short Documentary.
Whoa. Go ahead, Henry.
Someone in my
Go
family ahead, trying to get them.
You got bragging rights on that one.
Thank you. And please check out the September True West and my article about the making of Edward S. Curtis's 1914 Indian epic In the Land of the Headhunters. And you know, you can read all about this and so much more at www.westernroundupblocks.com.
Okay, and we'll talk to you next month, Henry, and turn your phone on.
I will do that. Happy
we'll
trails,
talk to you later,
folks.
Pal. All right.
Hi, bye-bye. Henry.
Hi, Bobby. Bye-bye.
And so now we know where in the world Henry Park was. Probably sitting in his dining room. Anyway, back to your book, Missy. And like I said, when we came back from commercial, we are back in the studio with our guest tonight, Stephanie Levine. And, of course, our erstwhile and our quirky co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, and Richard Polinelli and myself. And we are in the middle of asking her about character development and stuff. And, Bobby, did you have a question? If not, I will move on.
About characters?
Anything.
Well, I'd like to just make a comment about this is rich. This cast of characters is rich. Kate and Piper's mom and dad, what fun they must have been to write. Piper's dad, talk a little bit about him. And he brings in things like Shakespeare. Like, it was so interesting. What's going on with Piper's dad?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you caught that. I don't know why. He was, I think he's probably the sidest of the side characters, but I really enjoyed him just as this way that I could sort of inject these little interesting tangents that I find interesting and hopefully infect the reader in this very subliminal way, like, wait a second, should I go look that up? Should I go like later? Because I get into, I can go down the rabbit hole of random conspiracies or, literature, or just, things from the past, like, wait a second, the thing we've always known. And also in a very, very layered, not straightforward way, he was sort of shadowing or foretelling certain things, like, something might not be what it seems. Someone might be presenting themselves in a way, and we're taking them at their word. We're taking them for what it is. But so many people do that, and that's just human nature to some degree, to present, some version, in whether that was Shakespeare, we don't know, or, in this situation, Maggie's back story. And I have a thing about just people being excited about life and having hope, and that relationships don't necessarily need to fizzle because you've been with someone for a long time, and things, they go up and down, they change, but I don't like this idea of, oh, now you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you're just sort of a throwaway character who doesn't have a zest for life or can't be excited, because we're in a time now that's so different, and you know, people were living a lot longer, and we get all these opportunities to start again or go and explore. And so he retires sort of at the beginning. He's like, wow, what can I be into now? So he's into all these kind of things and just having all this fun. And he was just really fun for me to, you know, I just want people to look at life and be like, yeah, I want to be excited about, oh, I'm going to learn to cook, or I'm going to get into all this stuff. And we need, in my opinion, just more examples of that. So hopefully he was one.
Your characters in this book are, like Bobby just said, are phenomenal. They really, truly are. And which brings up a question that I usually try to ask all the writers that are on the show. When you're writing a particular character or a cast of characters, do you allow them to dictate where the story is going to go? Or do you kind of keep a leash on them and don't let them get that far into your brain?
I think it's that combination. You know, again, I didn't even know there was going to be a Boots. You know, I knew Brownie because that was the name of my great aunt's lost love back in Canada and a million years ago. And just, you know, so there were certain elements that I had from the get-go. And then often once I start writing, new people might pop in, or they take on personalities of their own, as all the characters did in this book. You know, I didn't know the dad. I just didn't know who he was going to be necessarily, you know. And again, he was like one of the lowest level characters, but he still needs to be rich and definitely just had his moments and needed to, you know, come and say the things he needed to say and have his and show his relationship, you know. So you don't want people just kind of coming in and out and not having any reason for being there. But right. I think they all, so when I start writing someone that hopefully is interesting on some level, they're there to provide something, but a lot of times, I don't know, like they, I've noticed more and more lately that I start writing someone with the intention of this is their job, or this is what they're going to do. And then they change on me, you know, as I start writing, especially the dialogue, I'm doing it right now. And I'm like, oh man, he's so cantankerous, but you know, I know his past, I know why he is, but it's so fun to be like, oh, sure. Who knew?
Sure. Do you find it that, when you are writing a minor character, that you try to put as much living into that minor character as you do your major characters, so people can kind of get an idea of who this guy is, because they are germane always to the story.
Yeah, I think you don't do it necessarily intentionally, but I'm somebody who chronically overthinks, and I'll tell my husband, like, oh, what about this plot? And he's like, you're adding too much in. I'm like, no, because it'll make its way in there. And so even if someone's just coming in for a little bit, I think once I get into it, then they have to kind of become a person for you to be excited to continue writing about them.
Right, right.
And so,
Richard, have you noticed the hands?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's got some Italian in her. She's got
that someplace.
We cannot talk without the hands going.
No.
I have the French side.
Which is why my mic is here instead of in front of me, because I'll smack the thing all over the place. Do we have time for one quick question? Because I know we'll come up on a break. Okay. I got to ask you about Gretchen, because my other career back in the before times was working for newspapers. And I was racking my brain trying to see if I had ever encountered a Gretchen during my times. And we did once. And we made that person's life miserable before he finally left. Where did Gretchen come from? Is this somebody you've run into and you kind of worked it into the story, or just came out?
Yeah, no, she just kind of came about. And I think I always want everyone to be really nice. I think that's one of my weaknesses. And so, and she still is kind of nice, but you know, I'm an overly friendly personality and like, oh, well, let me help you. And so I think that she probably, again, she sort of found her way in, and she needed to be different than the other characters and have different motivations. And of course, I worked in the film industry for a long time. And even though people in the film industry are a lot of fun, so probably a little bit less intense than journalism, but you know, you have your different levels and your producers and different things. So, I mean, there are definitely, I'm sure, people I've come across, but she just sort of was her own thing. And I had to find reasons. I don't know. She just kind of became created. I'm like, she was just who she was. She wasn't, sometimes I really do base people off of experiences I've had or conversations, but she was sort of her own, which is actually a little bit more difficult to write because you're kind of starting from scratch. But
yeah.
But she has a poofy cat.
She does have a poof.
She's got a little quirkiness too. She's got a poofy cat, a poofy hat cat.
And Meriwether, her one love.
She sort of reminded me of what I used to tell my sales manager when I ran a company that think of the worst boss you ever had and don't be him.
Yeah.
And I do think.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I know we have a break coming up, but, you know, I do think that that is a personality, though, in most industries, someone who wants very much for they want their career and they maybe aren't as personable. They maybe are competing, even if it's just against themselves, like against the world, and they struggle in their own way to find a way to relate, and they usually don't, and we often don't enjoy working with them, but
right, exactly.
But I think we have that in all industries.
Okay, we're going to take a real quick break here, so don't go away, Stephanie. This has been a lot of fun so far, and we are listening to the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back in the studio, of course, with Richard and Bobby Jean, our quirky co-host from Albuquerque. And, of course, Stephanie Levine from Florida. Yeah. And if you want to call and talk to Stephanie, we got about 20 minutes left, so you can give a call here in the studio. The number is 323. Let's see if I get this right, Bobby. 2030815. Is it correct?
I think
you
so.
You don't know. Never mind. Well, let's try it anyway. 323-203-0815. You can actually call and talk live with Stephanie or Bobby or Richard or me or whoever answers the phone. Sam, you want to talk to Sam, you can talk to Sam too. Okay. Story development, and I mean, you're obviously very good at it. Have you, you've written 50 books or over 50, I'm going to assume at this point. Is that close?
I don't really keep track because some are smaller. You know, when you're writing a bio or when a bio is being written about you, you sometimes, you know, I don't count them because you might have some small Christmas stories or things like that. But yeah, somewhere around there.
Okay. Have you done any ghostwriting? This was a question that Bobby and I talked about this afternoon.
I have not. I work with like some of my friends who are ghostwriters. I have friends who are ghostwriters, but I have not ghostwritten for anyone. You know, I was going to say I help them, you know, sometimes through the story, like what the expectation might be.
Sure.
Through that. But no, because... it's hard enough to write your own book.
Well, that is true. That is very true. Bobby, would you like to ask the question?
Well,
or you have another one?
The big question? No. Well, you write under more than one name. Some of your earlier books when you started in romances, is that right? And you wrote under other aliases, pen names. This book you're writing under your own name. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started with a pen name, and will you still continue like romances with pen names, and your mysteries or your cozy mysteries will keep your name, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was actually really strategic. So this was my third career. The film industry, and then I was a photographer and designer for many years. But the intention was always to be a writer, and then I would always chicken out, and I would create, have an entire different career and then come back to it and then run away again. And so at some point I knew, okay, now is the time, you know, you're not getting younger, life, you know, that you're going to have to work and put in the work. You've made it, you know, you've had decent careers in all these other industries and creative industries in particular, and you know what it takes. It just, you have to start, right? And you're going to maybe be bad, or you're going to have to learn the ropes, and you will eventually get better. So I was finally old enough to be able to have that talk and with myself and sit myself down and be like, just start writing. The world was a lot different at that point, which is only about five or so years ago when this version started. And that was a lot different than previous times where we didn't have self-publishing, we didn't have independent publishing, you didn't have the internet in the same ways. You know, it was query letters and rejections and things. You didn't have the ability, at least in my opinion, it didn't seem to take control of your career and have any say in it. And so there's a lot of vulnerability. So I think younger me was probably just scared. And so when I set out to do this or to start, I also knew that I am good at business most of the time, some of the time, and I'm a creative person. And those are two very different sides of my brain. And my creative side will just crumble under my own perfectionism and hypercriticism, you know, and would never get a book off of the shelf, you know, or off of my computer ever. And I also had learned by that point that you could have a lot of mediocre talents in any discipline. And I don't say that flippantly, and I don't say that like critically, but people who work hard aren't necessarily the most talented people, but they push forward, they get better, and they produce. And sometimes you'll have the most incredibly talented person, but if we've never read their book or seen their movie, what does it matter? You know, and they can just, you know, they'll live their life always thinking that they weren't enough because they couldn't get past how hard it is to learn to do the work. And so I knew all these things. And so when I sat myself down, I said, I need to learn to market. I need to learn the business side. And then I know that I'm creative enough that even if I'm, you know, whether I'm the worst or the best writer on the planet or somewhere in between, which is where I'm sure I am, I will get better. And I'm good enough to be able to write a book, you know, so I can do the writing work and I can get better at the writing work and I can continue to hone my craft and all that stuff. But if I can't learn what it takes as a business, then I'm not going to be successful ever. And so I went into it with the pen names just saying, okay, I'll learn how the business of writing. And there was no ego, there was no fear because no one knew who I was. And I actually had always planned to write mysteries, maybe a little more, you know, this one I always say was like a crossover. It's like sweet romance mystery, very Hallmark. It was supposed to be written to become like a Hallmark kind of television mystery show where you could every week always be doing a different mystery based on the newspaper and the genealogy. But so this one was a bit different than my original, more like a Carl Hyacin or Edna Buchanan, which, you know, more my style or hopefully what I'd like to, the kind of things I like to write. But I happened to, there was a course and it was about romance. And I said, okay, well, the timing was right. My mother-in-law read romance all the time and I was around her and we were good friends. I said, I will write books for you and I will learn the business and I'll put them out under pen names because the writing part, while important at that phase, was not the most important to me. And so that's sort of how that happened. And then in this last period of me sort of coming out as myself, I just thought, you know, it's time because I'm running a business now with all this other stuff. But, and that's limiting also when you're a pen name, when you're a quote unquote fake person, even though you're not, but you know, it's tricky. Yeah. And so I finally said, okay, all right, it's time. And here I am.
Richard.
Yeah. You know, you brought up the business side of it. And I think that's something that a lot of the new authors, the new writers don't appreciate so much coming in into it. This is a business and you're going to have to put in almost as much work on the business side of this as you are on the writing side of it. Stephanie and I were part of a meeting earlier today where we're learning a new marketing strategy that we're hoping will work. And you have to take that time out of your writing schedule, and you have to start exploring these things and learning these things. And I think you would agree with me that that's really, if you want to be successful, that's the part of this business you've got to learn is marketing.
It's huge. And I'd say in time, it almost trumps writing. I mean, for me right now, you know, you go through phases, but I have to probably spend more time running my business than I do getting to sit down and write. I'm like, oh, it's a Absolutely. Joy if I can sit down and work on a story.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Richard and I are we're both, I mean, I suppose we're kind of like deadly entrepreneurs. We got, our little boutique publishing house. And we don't do any marketing for you. We won't do any marketing for you. That's not on us. We will take your book, just like the commercial said, we'll take it, we'll edit it, we'll proofread it, we'll get it published, we'll get it printed, we'll get it on the shelf. At that point, it is your deal. And a lot of new writers don't get that. They think Penguin Books or Simon & Schuster, oh, they're going to do all the marketing for you. They're going to give you a publicist. They're going to give you an editor. They're going to do this. No, doesn't happen that way. Most of the books being done today are being done by small boutique publishers. And they're doing a fantastic job of it. And the writers, if you don't want to get involved in selling your book, don't write the book. Because that's your words and your product. And if you're not willing to go out there and move it, then you really shouldn't even be writing a book. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I went indie a couple of years ago was I had the traditional publishing route, had an agent, and basically they were putting my book on their newsletter, and that was their marketing. I was doing all the marketing, and I'm paying them, 85% of the royalties for me doing 100% of the work. So. Yeah, it's something that I think authors need to be ready to do. If you're going to write that book, you are going to have to do this. You know, we'll do. There's some things that we do just from our website standpoint and our social media standpoint. But you're going to have to get in there and get some work done too. Otherwise, you're going to sell 5 or 10 copies and that's it.
Right. Bobby, ask the question because we're running out of time.
Okay, so do you ever encounter writer's block? And if you do, how do you get out of it? And if you don't, what do you think of it?
Oh, I think everyone has writer's block. Maybe someone doesn't. I don't know who they are. I think one trick, or maybe there's just always tricks. One thing I've taken to doing the last, I think, 2 years, and it was part necessity, and now I find it's a really good writer's block
antidote.
When you're stuck, is I auto-dictate, and I actually hated it at first. It's almost like when I was young, I used to write longhand, and if I was writing creative writing, I had to write with a pen and paper or a pencil, usually in cursive, and that was the only way. And then computers existed, but we didn't use them for every single thing when I was very young. And then I had to learn, okay, I guess I can create. And I remember that moment where I was like, now I could creative write on a computer. And then now for years, obviously years and years, I've written creatively on a computer or on a pad, but mostly on a computer because it's just way easier than transcribing my notes. And when I started auto dictating, I got the same thing. I'm like, oh, this is clunky and this is so awkward, but I always have my phone with me. I have small children and I'm always being pulled in a million directions, and I would be somewhere sitting quietly, which barely ever happens, like in my car waiting for someone. And I thought, well, I better use this time wisely. And so I started auto dictating and I actually love it. Now I find that I think I might write better when I'm auto dictating. Although I think my sentences are probably more complex and more when I'm writing, if I'm typing, they're probably a little richer because I'm looking at it. Right. But I think dialogue flows really well when I'm auto dictating. And to your question about writer's block, one thing I've found with it is I just use my notes app most of the time, and I just push the play button, whatever, and I have to start talking. And I always think to myself, well, you know what? I can always delete it. You know, I don't have to, you know, whatever. And who knows what my phone thinks I said, because I know I'm going to have to edit it, because I look back later and think, that's not even a word. Like, what was I trying to say? Why did she think I said that? It makes no sense. But between that, there usually is a lot of usable stuff and I can rework it. But that's a really great way, almost the sort of, you know, almost like a writing sprint. You know, you just have to start jumping in. So that's a really been a really useful one for me, because I think I don't, to avoid overthinking. And I think about my plots and I think about the stories a lot. And so maybe sometimes just going and like I was baking cookies, because that's sort of my sort of calm, happy thing I sneak in sometimes. But when you can't write, sometimes you have to go do something else, you know, whatever that other thing is, like go walk around or move yourself and, garden or just do something. And that's helpful too. And let the thoughts sort of find their way.
Gotcha. We got to take another real quick break here, and we'll be back right after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back, and we only have about 2 minutes left. So I told you the other night, Stephanie, this goes fast. Seriously. You're going to look down, and all of a sudden we're out of time, like right now. So if you wouldn't mind, give our audience where they can reach you, your website, etc.
My website, my very easy to spell long French name, StephanieLevine.com. Hopefully that will be written somewhere, because it is not intuitive. And you could go there to find any of my social media handles. Most of them are my name, some variation thereof. And I am usually anywhere that you like to interact with books, Goodreads, BookBub, Amazon, or all my books are for sale there, Facebook and Instagram mostly. So please come say hello. Send me an email.
Yeah, well, we will. And we just really appreciate you spending your time with us tonight from the muggy state of Florida. And I know that, you know, it's late there. And I'm sure that you're chomping at the bit to go grab that wine or that cold beer.
The cookies. They're ready now.
Cookie. So we appreciate you spending your time with us. We know you have other things to do. So just like United Airlines, we appreciate you flying with us, even though you have other options. Well, you didn't have any other options tonight, but
this was wonderful. I would stay on with you guys all night. This is the biggest party I'll have all week.
I told you, it's just like sitting on your back porch, BSing with your friends. If you want to hang out, we'll be off the air and we'll be able to chat a little bit more. But right now, next week's guest is J.J. Gold. He's written a plethora of books. Oh, my gosh. He's got, they're the Dead series, Dead Heat, Dead Line, Dead In, Dead Air, Dead, I guess would be another
one. I'm sensing a pattern.
Yeah, I'm sensing a pattern here. Well, it's like John Sanford. What does he write? Pray. Incidentally, he was on our show. Throw that out there occasionally. Yep. And what a wonderful man he was. Okay. Thank you again, Stephanie, for joining us tonight. Thanks, Bobby Jean. And you are now our quirky co-host from Albuquerque. And Richard, you are our quirky host from Fruta, Colorado.
Yeah, and smoky Fruta right now.
And my secret studio somewhere in the Sawtooth Mountain Range in Idaho. Idaho, yeah. I am the hoe. And we will be back with you next week. I want to thank Sam Hassan and, of course, Richard, Bobby, Stephanie, And the bookie, you never can get away without the bookie. And thank you, Rick Gilman, for that wonderful intro music. And we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.